Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. They're back. The Brood 14 cicadas have emerged after 17 years of living underground. Joining us to talk about the cicadas, their life cycle, and how they fit into the larger ecosystem, we welcome Tawny Samiski, entomologist with UMass Amherst Extension. Hi, Tawny.
Good morning.
Russ Norton's educator in horticulture, entomology, and ticks with the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. Hey, Russ.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So listeners, if you have cicadas in your neighborhood, what are you seeing, hearing? You can join our conversation at 866-999-4626, or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, Russ, some of them, we don't have all of them emerging yet, right? So what are you hearing as far as the emergence at this point?
So it's really just starting. So I would say, I don't know, just after the Northeaster last week, we really started to see large quantities of them emerge from the soil. Prior to that, probably since about mid-May, around the 15th, you could see one or two here or there, but just in the last couple of days, there's been a lot, especially in the Forestdale area and in the Falmouth area.
So it seems like anywhere that's sort of around Joint Base Cape Cod, right? That's sort of the hot spot, if you will?
Yeah, I think kind of traditionally think of the Upper Cape area, so Bourne, Falmouth, and Sandwich being kind of hot spots,
mm-hmm.
Mashpee, and then maybe into the western parts of Barnstable, and with the hotter spots being closer to Joint Base Cape Cod, for sure.
So are we seeing them on the Outer Cape?
So they might see some through the Mid-Cape, and not likely to see many at all through the Outer Cape.
And the islands?
I don't think we're going to see any on the islands, but I don't know that for sure.
Right. And then do we have, we have some maybe over the bridge. We're not really sure.
Yeah, Tawny, I don't know if you want to touch on that a little bit.
Sure. So I've been watching iNaturalist, which we have a joint project with the Mass Department of Agricultural Resources, or MDAR. They've created this Mass Cicadas Brood XIV, or Brood 14, which is the brood we're talking about today. This project on iNaturalist, which anybody can sign in and upload photos and their location and the date of their observation and send us what they're seeing. So I really want to plug that, folks, please do that. These observations are really important and they help scientists track these populations. And so I see one on the map that someone reported that is confirmed over the bridge in Bourne. I can see it in the map. And those locations that Russ just outlined are absolutely the case. I personally was really lucky to go out last Friday and visit the Francis A. Crane Wildlife Management Area where they were located. Mm-hmm. I know the Mashpee National Wildlife Refuge, Camp Edwards, these are other locations where they're going to be found. But really to the point about Bourne and other locations sort of outside or on the fringes of the areas that Russ outlined, we really want folks to be looking and reporting what they're seeing, because that mm-hmm. data, knowing that they're still there or there at all, would be really helpful.
Yeah. So, and we'd love to hear if you're seeing them on the other side of the bridge. Give us a call, 866-999-4626, or send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Are there a particular habitat that they prefer, or what do we know about, you know, where we might find them? Because this isn't, we're the sort of hotspot in Massachusetts, but Tawny, unfortunately, you're not getting them in the western part of the state, right? But there are other parts of the country that have these 17-year cicadas, right?
So they are primarily, their primary hosts are deciduous trees. So that's a big part of their life cycle and their needs. So they tend to follow those. I think that's maybe why we see them in the areas that we see them on the Cape, because we have more deciduous forest in the Upper Cape versus, say, the Outer Cape that has more pine.
Yeah.
And I think that's driving a lot of it here, at least locally.
So what should we be on the lookout if we want to see the cicadas emerge? I've seen some little holes in my yard, but I haven't seen any cicadas yet in my yard. Of course, I want to see them. I know some other people are like, I don't want them in my yard.
Yes. So I can say that I think in around April 21st, the holes really started to first appear, at least in my yard. So a lot of holes started to appear, but there was no action, just the holes. And then it wasn't until about a month later almost that we started seeing some of them emerge, some of the nymphs emerge from the ground.
So I still have hope. I could still see some.
Yeah, they're still emerging now. I know that it's kind of really ramped up since last Friday.
Yeah. So, Tawny, how quickly does this emergence happen? Well, you know, does it a few days? Does it come in waves? How does it work?
Well, so the mass emergence tactic is really integral to their life cycle, and that's why we get all of, or nearly all of, the population coming out every 17 years. They really want to overwhelm their predators. So there's just so many cicadas that normally the predators that are out there cannot eat all of them. So it's a survival tactic. Mm-hmm. So they do come out and time their emergence relatively well so that it's, I say all at once, with, and this is within reason, thinking about the fact that they're beneath the ground for 17 years and then coming out to complete the above ground portion of their life cycle over a period of about 4 to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So they're really timing this quite well. That doesn't mean that every single one comes out on the same day. And I think Russ is really speaking to that with what he's seeing with the emergence this year. But they do really try to come out together because, of course, the adults will be calling to one another, males trying to attract females so that they can mate and the females lay the eggs.
Right. So these cicadas that we're seeing emerging are the offspring from the cicadas we saw 17 years ago. Tell us a little bit more about their life cycle.
Sure. Russ, do you want me to
take much
of that?
Yeah.
Okay. I can cover that and welcome you to chime in if I miss things. So their life cycle of the periodical cicada, they're known for this predictable timing. And the species we have in Massachusetts is Magicicada septendecim, which is also known as the Pharaoh cicada or Linnaeus's 17-year cicada. So they are emerging every 17 years. There are other periodical cicada species that will emerge every 13 years. So it depends on what specific type of insect that you have. But what is happening now, I'll sort of start with what we're seeing now. The nymphs are near fully developed and have emerged from the ground, but they will have one final molt or shedding of their exoskeleton before they develop into what is known as a tenaral adult. So the tenaral adult is this stage that is, I think, really fascinating to see right now. You see these adults coming out of their cast skin, their brown, lightweight, papery, nymphal skin or exoskeleton. And the adults are really like white or cream colored with yellow margins. And if you catch one that's just coming out, its wings are crumpled up. And the job of this tenaral adult is to expand those wings and then fully harden its exoskeleton so that the insect looks like what you would assume a mature adult cicada would look like, that it has this dark, almost black body with orange wings and legs and bright red eyes, right? But they don't look like that when they first emerge from that nymphal exoskeleton. And they're really vulnerable as a tenaral adult because, as I mentioned, the wings aren't fully expanded. They can't fly. So they're just often seen hanging off foliage or other surfaces, trying to pump those wings open and harden that exoskeleton so they're a little bit more robust and protected.
Yeah.
And then we hear the noise, which I don't know, Russ, do you want to speak a little bit to the calling? And we can kind of both talk about this if you'd like.
Sure. So from a perspective and what's going on this year, I just heard the first sounds of the cicadas on Sunday. And so it hasn't reached a really high pitch yet, but they were definitely, you could definitely hear them on Sunday and Monday. And so they're getting going just now. So, mm-hmm. But not to that point where you need headphones or something to cover your ears. They haven't reached that high
and it's
level.
It's an interesting sound. I was saying to Russ, I've said this before, it's almost like you're hearing the soundtrack of every 1950s sci-fi movie, right? Mm-hmm. They have this very strange sound.
Yeah.
I do have an email we had that we never got to from last time we were talking about cicadas. And I have to read this because this is such a great, and this was Nancy, who writes, our yard is a hot spot for cicadas, more like Cicada Central. 17 years ago, we experienced science fiction-like infestation of cicadas. Many moles uprooting our very mixed lawn and crows dive-bombing the yard. It was like otherworldly. It was very loud, so many we had to put buckets over our heads to get to our vehicles, parked, and open the door quickly so they would not enter the vehicle. Because I had never seen one before, one landed on my lap and I was putting my car in reverse. An otherworldly appearance frightened me, so I screamed, exited the car so quickly I did not put on the brake, and my car began to roll out of control as I ran to jump in and catch it before it went over the embankment. My hard of hearing Uncle Leonard, a biology teacher in Chicago, called me and, startled at the sounds coming from my phone, exclaimed, what on earth is that sound? And beckoned my elderly aunt to come listen, as it amazed him so much. Such a great email. And Nancy, if you're listening, I'm wondering if your yard is set on spot again this time around, right? Because they don't go very far, right? I mean, the hot spots we had before are likely to be the hot spots again.
Yes, very much so. Yeah, the ones that I see flying around, they're not, I wouldn't say they're the best flyers.
Yeah.
they seem kind of clumsy in the air so far.
So before we get to what's happening here, what's their life like underground, Tawny? What's happening when they're underground?
So when they're underground, this is the nymphal life stage, right? So they're immature insects. They're not fully developed. They are spending a lot of time feeding on the roots of their host trees, and what they are consuming is this fluid that we refer to as xylem fluid, which is essentially a sugary tree sap, watery with some dissolved minerals, that the roots are transferring to the upper parts of the tree. So it's a little bit low nutrient content, and so they're feeding on a lot of this over this long period of time, and growing and developing. And when the periodical cicadas hatch from the eggs that the females lay, they're very small in size. So they're about the size of a small ant, a couple of millimeters. Unless you're really observant and purposefully looking for them, you might not notice them at all. And they'll return to the ground from the locations in the branches where the females cut little slits and lay them in there. But they're very small when they hatch at the end of this season. So this 17-year period where they're beneath the ground, they're spending a lot of time feeding and growing so that when they emerge in 2042, do I have that math right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
When they emerge again in 2042, the nymphs will be closer to the size of the adult. They'll be, you know, around an inch or an inch and a half.
So they're not really moving around and very active under there, except for just growing and feeding, right?
Well, that is my limited understanding, although they do have some tunnels that are going to be, what, Russ, 7 to 8 inches beneath the ground, although I've heard some researchers say that they find them even closer to the soil surface than that.
So do you want to describe that? So like if you were digging in your yard and you're in a hot spot this year, you'd find them in the top like 8 inches or 6 inches of the soil. But in previous years, so if you were maybe digging a hole in the last 2 or 3 years, you could definitely find them when you're digging a hole. And sometimes they'd be down quite deep. Mm-hmm. So deeper than you'd expect, you know, over a foot in depth. And I can't really tell if they're moving around. And they definitely go down deeper than just the surface layers.
Ken in Barnstable writes, please ask your guests if there's any significance to the broods appearing in prime number increments, you know, 13, 17 years. And are there any other periodical cicadas elsewhere in the world? If so, how often do they emerge?
Russ, do you want me to speak to the prime numbers part a little bit?
Sure, yeah. I've heard some things as well on it too, but I'd like to hear what you got to say.
Okay. So yes, that question is one that extension groups get a lot, not just UMass Extension, but other, you know, Eastern United States Extension services in our land grant university system. And so synchrony basically, again, guarantees that these insects are finding mates, that they have predator satiation, that there's safety in numbers, and that they have this time to grow into this much larger size than what I was describing with when the nymphs first hatch. The prime numbers part of the story, 13 or 17 years for their cycle, this sort of sets them up so that they're less likely to overlap with other broods, which we didn't speak to as much, but the broods of periodical cicadas in the United States, and I hope I have this right, I believe there's 15 different broods. That is really sort of a record-keeping construct for scientists, just so that we can keep track of which species are emerging in a given geographic year on that given cycle together. And so that prime number that is being noticed, that is just sort of reducing variation in the synchrony of their emergence. And there are some scientific models that I can't claim to fully understand, because I don't specialize in periodical cicadas, but they're part of the tree and shrub insect world that I do provide continuing education for. It demonstrates that prime number life cycles could evolve in cicadas after interacting with their predators. So this is assuming that there's interactions between the predators and their prey. There might be random mutations in the prey, so in the cicada population over time, and then that interaction with predator starvation time. But predators themselves show no such patterns with those prime numbers. So it's that's probably a long, very complicated way of answering part of that question, but that's my general understanding. And I'm sorry, can you repeat the rest of the question? I think there were three parts, and I invite Russ also to chime in.
Let's start with Russ. Do you have anything to add about the prime numbers?
No, just that's basically what I've heard too about the predators, but there's just not a lot of scientific evidence to back that piece up.
Another question we need to answer. All right, so the other question was if there are other periodical cicadas elsewhere in the world.
Sure.
Yeah, all over, right?
There are other periodical cicadas elsewhere in the world. Actually, I was looking for some of the information you had asked about. We were talking previously, a question about after they mate, do the males stop singing? And I came across a journal article about a species in East Asia. So we know that they're in other parts of the world. There are researchers at the University of Connecticut that study periodical cicada populations, I believe, in Australia as well as New Zealand. So this is not just an Eastern North America phenomenon.
All right. We're talking cicadas this morning. What are you seeing in your yard? 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking cicadas this morning. The brood 14 cicadas are emerging after 17 years of living underground. With us is Tawny Smiski, entomologist with UMass Amherst Extension, and Russ Norton, educator in horticulture, entomology, and ticks at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. 866-999-4626 is our number. What are you seeing in your neighborhood or hearing? 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Natasha writes, glad to hear the power entomology team of Russ and Tawny speaking on cicadas. In Marston's Mills near Long Pond, we have a bunch of emergents. Super excited to scout daily for new emergents. So we're seeing in Marston's Mills, right? So this is good. You mentioned that heavy rainstorm last Friday, Russ. Would that have an impact on the timing of their emergence? I know soil temperature is also important, right?
Yeah, so soil temperatures around 64 degrees are kind of like the precursor for their, that synchronized emergence. And so we were seeing temperatures hovering right around 60 prior to that storm, and then they dipped quite a bit down, and then they ramped right up. And so we're back in the low 60s right now for soil temps. So we're basically in that period.
We got a little rain coming too. Does the rain have any impact, or is it just temperature?
I do not know whether the rain impacts.
Connie, do you know?
So I apologize. I wish I looked that up specifically for periodical cicadas. I do know that it is common for a lot of soil-dwelling insects that, pre their emergence, rainfall can help initiate that mm-hmm. for them, followed by the proper temperature range. Right. So that could be the case if I'm pulling from knowledge from other species, mm-hmm. but it may not be so for periodical cicadas.
So it's more the temperature. So this is the big question. Got a lot of people going, oh my God, I'm in a hot spot. They're going to eat all my trees. They're going to decimate. They don't, right? So what do they do? I mean, there might be a little branch. They lay the eggs on the branch, but people worried about what's happening, about destruction in their gardens. They don't need to worry about that, right?
No, certainly
correct.
Not.
Russ, do you want to start? Yeah,
yeah,
you go ahead.
The first thing I say is people should really enjoy it. It's really a natural phenomenon that they should,
And you only get to see it every 17
years.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And the insects themselves, when they emerge, they're really out to basically mate and produce the next generation. And so they do feed a little bit through the xylem, but it's not enough to harm plants. And then through the ovipositing, there is a little bit of injury that's caused to the wood of new shoots that can sometimes lead to the flagging of those shoots later in the season. But even that is not shown to be a harm to plant health whatsoever. So really, there's no point in controlling them from a plant perspective.
So they're laying their eggs on new shoots of the trees. Is that what they're
correct.
Looking for?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
And then shoots. And those will fall off maybe to the ground, and that's when.
So the eggs are laid in little slits that the females, I believe, they chew into the twigs, and then those eggs hatch, and then that little nymph falls to the ground. So
I see.
The shoot doesn't
the
fall
shoot,
off.
The nymphs do. Okay.
Yep.
Great. All right. You want to add anything to that, Tawny?
Oh, absolutely. Just again to state that folks should not be killing these insects. There's no reason to be managing them with some very limited exceptions that I can talk about. But really, the take-home message, if folks listening remember one thing that we say, I hope it's this, that just please preserve these periodical cicadas, encourage their population, do nothing to harm them. As was said, it's just every 17 years for a period of 4 to 6 weeks. I really encourage folks to coexist with them and let them do their thing in the geographic area in eastern Massachusetts where they're located. This is really sort of a small part of the population of brood 14, and we really want them to continue to be present for a lot of different reasons. So that ovipositioning behavior, the egg laying behavior that Russ mentioned, when they cut the slits into the small twigs and branches to lay their eggs, yes, this can cause a bit of branch dieback and flagging, but research from Dr. Zoe Getman Pickering, who is now at UMass Amherst, has shown that larger established mature host trees, so the oaks that they're going to be laying their eggs in, birch, hawthorn, dogwood, other species, even maple, mature established trees can withstand this, and they may even benefit from it. So it acts like a natural pruning service on these trees. Their research showed that trees that had high flagging were smaller than less damaged trees in the year following that flagging. However, that size difference reversed by the second year. So highly damaged, mature, established trees grew larger than their undamaged counterparts. So the periodical cicadas are doing a good thing to those mature trees. If you have a small tree that's been newly planted, I would encourage netting with an opening size of less than a centimeter, roughly.
So that's really the only thing you have to worry about is maybe the new tree is netting a new small tree. Right?
Yeah.
And when we think about it, I mean, look at all the habitat destruction we've done, right, with the building and all that. So we've already impacted their population just, you know, with development, right?
For sure.
Yeah. All right, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Tawny, you mentioned, you know, the importance in the ecosystem. Talk a little bit about that. Why we need these guys.
Oh, absolutely. So this phenomenon of the cicadas coming out every 17 years acts really as a resource burst or resource pulse. So this is something in science that we think about as an infrequent, large magnitude and short duration event that increases resource availability in an ecosystem. So that, I think, to me, really describes the above ground part of the life cycle of the periodical cicada. So while they are available in the ecosystem, they're going to be fed upon by many different organisms. So birds, mammals, even other insects, fish, if they fall into that habitat, will feed on them. And then after the adult cicadas perish, their natural mortality at the end of this 4 to 6 weeks, their cadavers return nutrients to the soils. So we really will be seeing that the predators that benefit from them will benefit. There was research in Kentucky that turkeys had a 95% increase in their reproduction during the 2008 cicada emergence. So bird populations are definitely benefited by this. And again, we just really want to remind folks that they're native insects. This is a natural process. They're not a plague, and they benefit our ecosystems.
Might want to keep the dog from munching on them, though, because it can upset their tummies. Right?
That is true. Yep. And I've heard from a couple of folks that their dogs are interested in eating them. So just mind your pets.
For a few weeks.
Yeah.
All right. So that sound that we associate with the cicadas, made by the males. Russ, how do they make that sound?
Oh, Tawny, I'm going to let you
cover this. Oh, Tawny, okay. Tawny, what? How do they make the sound?
Sure, I can do that. So, the males primarily are making that sound, although research shows that the females are able to participate in this manner of speaking to one another. But for males, they have organs called timbals. So these are rigid membranes that are located on their first abdominal segment. And the abdomen of the male is hollow. So it acts similar to a resonating chamber. So those timbals and the hollow abdomen allow them to create this very loud buzzing song that they will join together in groups, sometimes referred to as choruses, to attract the females. I've been told that of the different species of periodical cicadas, Magicicada septendecim, the one that we have on the Cape, is quieter, relatively speaking, but that might be, not be, you know, your experience out there for sure. They're loud, but there are other species that might be louder.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Albert, who's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Albert.
Good morning. This is Albert Bradley in North Falmouth.
Hi.
Some years ago, I can't tell you whether it was 17 or not, I was in Newport at a wedding when there was a explosion of cicadas in the area. And I was really interested to notice that two groups of them in trees in the large outdoor area where we were, this is in the evening, were calling to each other. One group said, zit, zit, and the other group replied, zit, zit. Then the first group did zit, 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 and the second group did zit, zit, zit. Has anyone ever experienced or studied communication from groups of cicadas?
Good question. What an interesting thing to have at your wedding, huh?
It is a great question.
Do we know? I mean, Tawny, do you know of any research like that? Well, I mean, we think they're looking for a mate, is what it is, right?
Oh, absolutely. They're talking. I'm anthropomorphizing them. They're communicating with one another for mating. And I was just looking. You said Rhode Island. I'm not immediately recalling or coming up with information about a periodical cicada brood in Rhode Island. But I and Russ can correct me if he knows otherwise. But I can tell you. For periodical cicadas, for Magicicada species, there is a lot of research into how they communicate with one another. I cannot pretend to be the expert on that research, but I can speak to it a little bit more in the sense that I mentioned the males having those timbals. Both sexes, the males and females, have an organ called tympana, which they're basically ears. They allow the insects to pick up on those signals, to hear one another. And scientists have all different terms for the signals that the males make and the signals that the females make. So males can make alarm sounds. They can do a calling song that attracts both males and females to the chorus. They have courtship songs or courting calls, and scientists have sort of grouped them into groups 1, 2, and 3. And they have ways of describing what these different calls sound like. And then females, they will actually signal back to the males doing wing flicks. So they make this timed wing flick signal to respond to the male calls. And that has a sound, obviously much quieter than what the males are doing. But it's been studied for a long period of time, and it's more complex than you might think.
Yeah, always is. Albert, thanks for that question. That was a good one. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking about the Brood 14 cicadas emerging after 17 years of living underground. With us is Tawny Samiski, entomologist with UMass Amherst Extension, and Russ Norton, educator in horticulture, entomology, and ticks at the Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. 866-999-4626 is our number. What are you seeing or hearing? 866-999-4626. Or if you have a question, we'd love to hear from you. ThePoint@capeandislands.org. Tawny, you mentioned the science that they've been collecting on communication, and just made me think, wow, that's tough. You have such a short window, right, that they're here. And I imagine they're frantically collecting this sound to be able to study that. What a complicated area of study.
Oh, absolutely. And there's some fascinating older research, very historical papers from some of the nation's first entomologists, in fact, London-born entomologists that then immigrated to the United States and were studying these insects. And it's a fascinating area that really, I mean, most scientists have short field seasons to get their work done, but this is, as you
really
mentioned,
short, yeah.
incredibly short.
And do the cicadas stop singing once they've mated? Do we know the answer to that?
Well, so I am not 100% certain about our species. I did find information for other species of cicadas that the males may indeed slow down or stop their singing following mating. And it was hypothesized that it is just for them such a large use of their energy that they really run out of energy after all of that singing. They're exhausted and the mating.
All right. That's funny. All right, Dan is giving us a call from Hyannis. Hi, Dan.
Hi there. How are you?
Great.
Okay. I called a few months ago when you had another gentleman there about cicadas, and I didn't get my question answered. And when I tried to say he's not answering it, I was cut off.
Oh, sorry about that. What's your question?
Yeah. All right. My question's about the cicada in Provence in France. It's a different sound. I've lived there and I've had friends there, and it's I'll try. It goes. It's very different from what we have here. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when one of my colleagues came over and visited us in America, and we had cicadas, she didn't believe that they were cigales. She said, "No, those are crickets."
Oh, funny.
Dan,
were these cicadas that you heard in France, were they the 17 year? Did they emerge every 17 years, or were they a different?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But it's so different, and yeah. It's
well,
constant.
Do they have a different call, either so, Russ or Tawny, of the different species?
I mean, just briefly, you know, just between periodical cicadas and dog day cicadas, even that music is different. And so they have totally different sounds. And even within the different broods, I believe there's different rhythms and things. Tawny, can you...
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I think that's a good answer, Russ. And I am not very familiar with the cicadas of France, although I gather that they have about 15 different species of cicada in the south of France. So mm-hmm. to Russ's point, I imagine that each one would have different ways of signaling within their own species so that they're attracting mm-hmm. suitable mates. They're attracting other individuals
species,
they can
yeah.
actually mate with. Yeah, yeah. So I imagine the song would be different from our North American species, but I'm sorry mm-hmm. yeah. To the caller. I don't know.
And Dan, does that make sense?
Well, it's
yep.
It's really staccato like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, what they're saying is probably a different species. There are 15 different species in the south of France, so it's okay. probably a different species than we have here.
All right, and yeah. they're not sure what
yeah.
they have over there.
Right, exactly. But Dan, thanks for the question. All right, Tor is giving us a call. Hi, Tor.
Oh, hi, Mindy. Good morning to you all. I don't know your speakers, but I have to say that in my experience, the Crane Reserve is a great place to go right now mm-hmm. for cicadas, the 17-year magic cicada. And of course, it's magical to watch the metamorphosis occur. That's one of the key features that can inspire the youngsters to stay with biology studies. The more important point I wanted to get to is about predator-prey. And in annual cicadas, in my experience in New Jersey, that would be the Palisades of Englewood near the Hudson, the annual cicada is attacked by a giant wasp called a cicada mm-hmm. killer wasp. And we used to listen to the awful drone of the attack mm-hmm. and the subduing by the toxin. And then the cicada is dragged down into the tunnel by the wasp. Mm-hmm. And out here, it's a very huge, formidable, almost like as big as a tarantula wasp from Arizona. But I don't see it here, and I haven't noted any wasp predator on our magic cicadas here.
Oh.
Could you speak to
do
that?
We have? Do we know, Russ?
We definitely have cicada killers in our area, so I don't know the specific species of cicada killers that we have, but.
But we do have some.
We definitely have some.
Hopefully, don't have that one that I saw in New Jersey, Tor. Thank you.
Some of them
are
quite large.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow. Okay. So once they mate and lay the eggs, they die, right? How long does that process take? Is that whole 4 to 6 week process, Tawny?
Oh, yes. And is it okay if I speak to the cicada
killers
sure. just
yeah,
a
yeah,
tiny
yeah.
bit?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
So I hope I'm pronouncing this properly. Species speciosus. That's the cicada killer wasp that we have. And they do exist, as Russ said, in Massachusetts. They are typically not considered predators of periodical cicadas because they don't line up in time and space. So they are going to be active later in July and August, post the periodical cicada timeframe. They are really feeding on those dog day cicadas,
okay.
which are a different species that takes 2 to 3 years to develop, but they come out yearly. Mm-hmm. And then I apologize.
That's right. The question was like once they mate and then lay their eggs, right? The cicadas die. So how long does that process take?
Oh, sure. Yes. So they do, they have that 4 to 6 week period where they're calling, they're mating, the females are laying the eggs, and then it's so that's their above ground, very noticeable time frame for the adults. And then 6 to 10 weeks later, the eggs will hatch, and then those tiny ant-sized nymphs will move to the ground where they dig into the soil and then begin that subterranean part of their life cycle.
And then we should mention the once they die, you want to just leave them there, right? Because they're going to be good for your soil.
Absolutely. I and Russ, oh, sorry, I hope I didn't jump. I can't,
No, that's all right.
but I will say just in natural environments, absolutely. This is an influx of nutrients to the soil. Russ, do you want to speak maybe to
Yeah,
ornamental areas?
they're going to biodegrade pretty quick, so you're not going to see them for too long. I know in areas where they emerge in really high numbers, there's a lot of cast skins on the soil surface and some dead bodies in there. But they're going to get covered up by plant material and things like that and just let them naturally decompose.
So if they're around your tree in your yard, should you push them over into the garden?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could
It's
sure do that.
a little free fertilizer.
Exactly.
All right. So, have there been instances where a brood has emerged earlier or later than expected? You know, a 17-year cicada that became an 18-year cicada. Have we seen that anywhere yet?
Russ, I could speak to that a bit if you would like. The stragglers.
Yeah,
Yeah,
so
do, yeah.
I'll just say this that real quickly, in the last couple of years, so last year and the year before, we do have some oddballs that pop out that are definitely periodical cicadas that we've seen.
Early to the party.
Yeah, you know, it's just one here or there, but it does happen. And Tony can definitely talk more to that.
Sure, those oddballs, sometimes folks call them stragglers. They are emerging off cycle, and this has been pretty well documented in the scientific literature. And really, it's not as much to do with being late. They may either be late or earlier than expected, and it's typically a very small percentage of the population that this happens to. So they're generally either just before or just after when we expect the mass emergence to occur. So it does happen.
Is there evidence that climate change is impacting their life cycle or the time of year that they emerge?
That is a complex one. Russ, do you want to start and I can add, or what
Yeah.
do we think?
Yeah, you know, I'd imagine that it sure will have an impact. You know, I don't know if we know what those impacts are yet or what those impacts will be, but you know, especially with our population being on the Cape, our climate change is a little bit buffered by the ocean. So I'd imagine those places that are a little bit more inland might have a little bit more susceptibility to that than
Yeah.
ours.
Tawny?
Well, so I think the long time scale for periodical cicadas and the long time scale for climate change kind of we can talk about both of those things together. So periodical cicadas being around for millions of years on planet Earth, and climate change being a phenomenon that's taking a long time. It's not your weekly weather that we're talking about here, but these cicadas have survived substantial past periods of climate change, natural changing climates on planet Earth. And of course, we know we have human created climate change occurring that we are very concerned about. And yes, I think periodical cicadas, as well as many other insects, are being influenced by this. Knowing exactly how they will be influenced, that's where the difficulty comes in and where the science, I think, is really complex.
Yeah, I say long term, like we're talking about soil temperature being critical to when they emerge. So watching each year to year how that, and it's small, right? I mean, this isn't like all of a sudden next year we're going to have 60 degree, you know, soil in February, right? So it's very, it's yeah, it's over a long term,
That
yeah.
difference between weather, you know, we're always thinking about weather,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
Because those changes we see, but yeah, climate
Yeah.
is much longer approach.
So, Tani, you touched on this earlier, but I want to revisit. If people want to document the cicadas in their neighborhood, are there researchers interested in what people are observing and how do they report that?
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that back up again. So, yes, we want folks to take pictures of them, note your geographic location and the date that you observed them. And then, if you go to www.inaturalist.org and search for the mass cicadas brood XIV, the Roman numerals for 14, that will bring up a project that you can submit your photos and their locations to. And it's really cool. I can see that there's 191 different observations on there right now, and we really hope your listeners will log in and add those observations. If you're not as tech savvy, and at my own risk of being flooded with with reports, UMass Extension and our Landscape Nursery and Urban Forestry program, we do have a website. If you look up UMass Extension Landscape Nursery and Urban Forestry, you'll find me, Tawny Simiski, on there, and you can send us or send myself a message, and I can help get those reports on there, especially if you're in those outlying areas. And Plymouth County is historically a location where periodical cicadas were in Massachusetts. We want to hear from you folks too.
Yeah, and so yeah, especially if you're in the sort of the border areas, and if you see some on the islands, right?
Yeah.
And why do we think they're not on the islands? Were they at any time in the past? Do we know?
I do not know that, but just to emphasize the importance, like if you're in that Wareham, Bourne area,
yeah.
Sagamore, Plymouth, yeah, that'd be really great data to capture.
Yeah.
If you can make those reports.
Russ, do you remember the first time you saw one of these cicadas?
Yeah, so I grew up on the Cape, and so I was, where was I? I was at school in Sandwich on the, you know, during recess, and they were flying around, and it was pretty interesting. You know, these big flies, didn't think much of it. I lived in East Sandwich, which oddly enough, there isn't very many there, but we were driving into Forestdale, and man, they're everywhere when you get to the other part of Sandwich. So it goes from like nothing to a ton, where you almost need like a tennis racket to walk around so that they're not hitting you type situation. So that was my first exposure.
Like Nancy with the baskets over their heads. What
yeah,
about you,
exactly.
Tawny? What was? Do you remember the first time you saw one?
Well, Russ, is that why you do what you do? I'm just curious. Was that a formative childhood experience?
It was not. I'm more of a plant person, so it's insects by secondary.
And Tawny, when did you first see yours?
Well, so I'm a native of Western Massachusetts, and as we've talked about, we're not as lucky. We don't have periodical cicadas. I know I saw some catskins in New York, and I'm forgetting when this was. This was on a tree or an up, or even a light post in New York City, and that could have been a dog day catskin. I don't know. So my first known experience with periodical cicadas was this past Friday, going to the Francis A. Crane wildlife management area and observing them. I brought my husband, our son, our 6-year-old came, and if he wants to be an entomologist, he doesn't have to be, but I got some great pictures that he can use in his future if he'd like
to. He decides to do that, yeah. And we should just mention, not only do they not harm your plants, but they don't bite. If they land on you, we should just mention that.
They're harmless.
They're completely harmless. I know your poor daughter's traumatized from falling in her hair. But
she got over it real quick, yeah.
And she's still interested. And we're going to post more information about the 17-year cicadas and how to contribute to cicada research at our website, capeandislands.org. Tawny Simiski, entomologist at UMass Amherst Extension, and Russ Norton, educator in horticulture, entomology, and ticks at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. Thank you both so much for being here today. Appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us, Mindy.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.